The Athletic.
The teams that came up that season were West Ham and Swindon Town.
It was Huddleston. They were really good.
Was Huddle playing as a player manager at the time as well?
Yeah.
Dropped himself into the middle of a back three and just decided to play like Franz Beckenbauer. Hello and welcome to Pod on the Tyne, your go-to Newcastle United podcast brought to you by The Athletic. My name's Taylor Payne and coming up on this week's show. Survival confirmed, a heart full of goals and a huge 3 points against Leicester. We'll look back on Friday's massive win. Steve Bruce flapping his gums on TalkSport and Mike Ashley decrying the dark forces that are holding the club back. We look at all the news from another bizarre week in Newcastle United land. We go back to May 1993 in the archives and the 7-1 thrashing of Leicester City at St James's Park. And the quiz is back. And this week your hostess with the mostess is Christopher Waffles, who is aged 13 and from Newcastle. Chris, how are you doing? Are you good?
I'm a little bit concerned that dark forces are hanging over this podcast.
Yes.
Well, they're always hanging over the bloody quiz.
They are. The same dark forces that didn't do the dishes this morning when I got up. The bastards. They're always up to something, aren't they? How are you, George? Are you good?
Yeah, I'm all right, thank you. We're safe, so therefore... You know, come on. Brilliant.
We are safe.
How are you, Taylor?
I'm okay. You know, Chris, I'm all right. The weather's been a bit up and down, hasn't it? And this week I decided to do up my backyard, so make it all nice for the summer, and got a barbecue and a gazebo.
Is that a euphemism?
Yeah, as well. got a barbecue and a gazebo and some seating and stuff and a fire pit, and had promptly pissed it down for 3 days. It was great.
If you want to do up your backyard... Please try manscaping.
Manscaped, yeah. And your front yard as well. Absolutely. Well, chaps, just before we crack on with the podcast, I've got enough time to tell you about the latest offer from The Athletic. So you can subscribe to The Athletic UK right now for a special price of £3.99 a month for 6 months. That's 40% off the full price of a subscription. You'll enjoy great analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, as well as ad-free versions of all of our podcasts. Chris, have you got anything interesting in the pipeline?
Well, I did a piece, which obviously we'll discuss more about Leicester City, the game, then Newcastle's magnificent victory, and sort of almost, it was both a positive piece, but also sort of almost trying to just express anger at the fact that Newcastle can be so abysmal one week and then inexplicably so brilliant the following week and why there's no rhyme or reason to it. so there's a piece on that. And then also, I've done a bit of a ranty column about Mike Ashley and Dark Forces and how really... he can talk about dark forces, but as we all know, there's only been really the darkest of dark forces over Newcastle United over the last 14 years has been one man and one man only, and that is Mike Ashley himself. So those are up on The Athletic at the moment.
It's all gone a bit Star Wars, hasn't it? Dark forces indeed. George, how about you? Anything interesting at the minute? You're doing a little bit of work with Mr. Alan Shearer at the moment, aren't you?
Yes, a couple of things working at the minute. So Athletic subscribers were asked last week to try and name their squad for the England squad for the Euros, and so Alan's had a go at doing that as well. So I've been chatting to him about that. I was actually at Leeds at the weekend, so having watched Newcastle on the Friday night, went to Leeds filling in for our Brill Leeds writer Phil Hay, who's off at the moment. Get well soon, Phil, if you're listening. And God, it was just great. It was great. I mean, I think one of the kind of real sadnesses of this season is that we've not had the chance to sort of witness Elland Road in its full part. I'm sure we've all got horror stories about visiting Leeds as away fans. I mean, I know how I have, but it's just one of those great northern bear pit arenas.
Proper football ground, isn't it?
Proper football ground, proper fans. And Jesus Christ, the way that team play football. I mean... I'm sure that the stuff I wrote about was not necessarily very, very original, but it just feels to me like Bielsa. I mean, we know that he's always talked about this as this kind of quirky but innovative coach, but really he's made Leeds again. I think that's the sort of beauty of what he does. The way they're so aggressive, they're so ferocious, they're in your face, and it was kind of very good to see them tearing into Tottenham as well. Thoroughly enjoyed that, and can't wait till the prospect of Newcastle going to Elland Road in front of a full house is a very, very enticing.
Scary. Yeah. I would love to see a Bielsa's Newcastle just to see how they play, how he would approach this team, you know, just to see what he could get out of them. I think they're an astonishingly exciting football team to watch. I was actually watching them the other night as well, and I was knackered watching it.
They're exhausting to watch. You don't actually know where to look. I mean, I think that's the thing. And they just run. They just run and run and run. And that's not to say that they haven't got kind of great talent, because they do, but it's just that. And you know, they go ahead, and then they keep running. They keep running at you, and they do leave space behind. So there's always like that sort of chance. But when they're playing like they did against Spurs, it's that chance is an illusion, because they just keep coming at you, and they come at you until you make a mistake. But it's great to watch. I really enjoyed that.
You had an interesting view from the press box, didn't you, George?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I had a big set of stairs. I had a big set of stairs up to the gantry in the way. So maybe my enthusiasm was only based on the fact that I could see half of the pitch. I don't know.
That sounds good. Cool. You could watch Newcastle like that, to be honest. It might make things a bit more interesting. Yeah. Well, there you go. Those pieces from Chris and George on theathletic.com right now. So get yourself over to theathletic.com/Newcastle pod to take advantage of the 40% off a full subscription discount. That's theathletic.com/Newcastle pod. Right then, lads. The Leicester game. Chris, best performance of the season so far? What do you think?
Yes, very much so. Certainly for 80 minutes. I think it was the best performance of the Steve Bruce era, given the sort of opposition, given the, I suppose, lack of expectation going into the game, which is the piece that I sort of wrote afterwards. So it was the opposite. What was so frustrating about Arsenal was that we allowed, as George mentioned last week, we allowed ourselves to sort of anticipate that Newcastle may go out and perform well, and they absolutely bombed. And then at Leicester, it was the complete opposite, because they've been so bad against Arsenal, given the opposition they were going to play. I don't think anyone had any expectations. I drove down to the King Power Stadium, and on Friday, it was funny because Thomas Concannon, who's a member of the NUST, who I know quite well, I'd been exchanging messages with him on Friday, and he'd sort of said, "Are you going to observe the 3-goal rule? And when the third goal goes in, are you going to leave?" Talking about Leicester. And when the third Newcastle goal went in, he texted saying, "Have you left the ground yet?"
Before you carry on with that, Chris, I mean, I think you actually make a good point. I spent about 20 minutes, 25 minutes in that first half feeling irritated. And I know that sounds like a sort of almost ungrateful, but as you said, I'd look forward to Arsenal. I'd look forward to Arsenal after the game. It was like, oh, great, you know, there's a free hit, Arsenal is shit, you know, we can have a go, it'll be good. And then was thoroughly sort of dejected. And then so for Leicester, my only expectation was that we'd get stuffed. And so I didn't have that sense of anticipation about us doing well. And so thought, when we start, it's like, you can't even let me do misery properly.
I watched that game with very much the same feelings in that first half, and just thinking, how bipolar is this football team? We, you know, one minute we're absolutely god awful, and then the next minute we're playing like this, and we're putting 4 goals past a team in the top three, and we look like we could beat anyone. What the hell is going on with this football club? It's frustrating as a fan to see that, because I just think if the consistency could be there, I mean, you don't expect to win every week. And you don't expect to beat teams like Leicester and Arsenal every week. You don't. You are going to lose games in a league season. That's just the way it goes. But you watch those games and you think, why can't we find some level of consistency? What is it that's stopping us from doing this, Chris? Is it the way the club's set up? Is it the way the squad are playing? Is it the tactical approach? Is it, I don't know, is it the attitude? Is it the fact that we're pulling towards the end of the season now? Why can't Newcastle hold it together for more than a couple of weeks?
I think there are myriad reasons, and I wish I could put my finger on it. That was basically I didn't really come to a conclusion. My piece, if I'm perfectly honest, because it's almost impossible, because you just don't know what the sort of issues are, and that's. But I mean, we're talking about it to a certain degree in negative sense. But it was brilliant to see,
it was great.
The way that It wasn't just the fact, because people talk about, oh, sometimes Newcastle just sit off and allow the opposition, but it was, they let Leicester have the ball, but then on the occasions they got the ball, they attacked with precision, with purpose, and the way that they unsettled Leicester, and undoubtedly Johnny Evans getting injured affected Son Heung-min, that sort of affected the rest of the Leicester team, and they weren't at their best in that sense. But Newcastle made it difficult for them. That was because the front four pressed really high, and I thought that Willock, from the start, there was a few things where people saying, oh, Sean Longstaff's a bit unlucky to be dropped, and I think in many ways he was, but you could see what Willock brought, and the way that he wins the ball, the way he drives forward with possession, the way he gets into the box, really unsettled Leicester, and it seemed to bring out the best in Callum Wilson as well, because suddenly there's several threats coming forward. And the best bit of all, really, for me, was actually that Alan Saint-Maximin wasn't relied upon for once. Newcastle showed that they can play, even when Alan Saint-Maximin isn't at his very best, Newcastle can cause problems, and they were excellent going forward.
I mean, So Yunshu looked like he hadn't even considered the fact he was in a football game until about 25 minutes in, did he? He was all over the place. And I think, like you say, that the Johnny Evans injury absolutely affected him. And it was great seeing Willock blast forward and get that goal at the start, George, wasn't it? It was a lovely finish. He's done really well. And he adds that level of dynamism to the midfield that we've probably been missing over the last few weeks.
Oh, definitely, definitely. And far beyond that as well. No, it's that thing about the consistency. It's so interesting that. It's like if you've ever played golf, it's that sensation of, all right, I'm totally shit at this game. I've scuffed them all along the floor. And I'm not talking to someone who's a golfer, but you then do one good shot and somehow you kind of come away from that thinking, well, that's how good I actually am.
I'm buying really, a set of clubs next week.
Yeah, but you're not. Yeah, yeah. You've actually done 100 shots and you've done one good, but yeah. you sort of come away thinking, that's how good I could be. And you look at Newcastle and there's no, I mean, you know, they're a lower half Premier League team. I mean, we know that. But to go from Arsenal to Leicester makes no sense at all. That's not inconsistency. That's something far... That swing is far bigger than that. And that is the thing that's... You know, that's the thing that's difficult to explain. I mean, if you look over the course of results, you know, particularly since Brighton, you know, it's worth repeating again, you know, having been there... I was pretty sure that we would be talking about Newcastle going to Fulham on the last day of the season, with it all to play for. And thank goodness that is not the case. If you look at those games since then, you take Arsenal out of it. It's been impressive and it's been encouraging. And you've got lots of people to give praise to, aside from the coaching staff, who, you know, for obvious reasons they have to take credit when results go well. But, you know, you're talking about players, obviously, like Wilson coming back and Saint-Maximin, obviously really important. Willock's goals, then Willock coming into the team, then Richie, then Murphy.
Dubravka as well.
Dubravka, all those players. But all of those players, more or less, have been involved in the whole, you know, were involved in Arsenal as well. So it's I don't know, they're very difficult to make sense of. But just that feeling of... finding it enjoyable to watch a 90-minute game of football has been such a rarity. And I do actually include the last 10-15 minutes in that, because they sort of made it exciting, and they did make us think, oh God, oh no, 4-1, 4-2, it's...
Yeah, so, here we go.
So there was a bit of Newcastle sort of style jeopardy, which I kind of quite enjoyed as well.
Like George said there, Joe Willock, fantastic. Paul Dummett, first goal in 5 years, Chris. Well, that's a bit of a bolt out of the blue, isn't it? And Matt Ritchie continuing his good form as well with assists. And lovely to see Callum Wilson back amongst the goals as well, but now unfortunately ruled out of the last three games with a hamstring injury. But great to see him scoring, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if I deal with Wilson first, it was, again, I think Joe Linton's played better in recent weeks, but just the difference that when Callum Wilson comes into the side, and the difference just to what Newcastle have had over the last few years, having that proper centre forward, he's very clever in his movement.
He is.
He always makes it difficult for defenders. And his coolness when he finishes. And I mean, there's that interview afterwards where he comes across as really arrogant, but also it's sort of what you want in a striker.
Yeah.
Where he just said, yeah, it's trademark Wilson. And it's like, what? Just talking about his own finish, yeah. And he's referred to himself as Wilson, and it's just the coolness to go around the keeper for the first, and then the second one, the finish, where the ball comes back, and the angle is so narrow, and he just sticks up his left foot and just puts it back in. Absolutely brilliant. And
what a ball from Richie as well, to put him away.
Incredible. Oh, I mean, Richie again showed the impact he has had since he's come back into the team in terms of his leadership, in terms of what telling people to do. I mean, there was at one point where I think in the first half, if you could listen on the cameras, where he basically told, I think it was Willick, to F and shoot at one point because he wanted, and that's just the sort of drive you get from... Well, exactly. That's the sort of drive that he brings, that Matt Ritchie brings, and also, but also the delivery. I mean, obviously, he got the assist for Paul Dummett as well. If Callum Wilson had been injured 3 weeks ago, I think we would all have been alarmed. It's still not ideal that he's going to miss the last three games of the season, and it's a bit concerning that he's got another hamstring problem. Don't know exactly if it's a tweak of the same one, although when he did suffer the initial injury, the information that we received from people close to Wilson was that really 8 weeks was sort of very ambitious for him to be back. And so perhaps he's just been able to be nursed through this. Hopefully he has the summer off if he doesn't go to the Euros, as it doesn't look likely that he will, and then he can come back fully fit for the start of next season. Because when Callum Wilson is in the Newcastle side, they are an entirely different proposition to when he isn't.
Yeah, it's obviously, it also rules out any tiny hope that there would have been of him forcing his way into the England squad. I don't think that was ever on the cards, to be honest, but in fact I'm pretty sure it wasn't, but yeah. And it's, you know, we know that he injured himself during the closing stages of the Leicester game. I mean, it's a bit, you know, he did stay on for the full 90 minutes, which isn't great, but we don't know any of the details at this point. Newcastle had used up their three substitutes, but only by the very end. You would sort of hope that that would be, you know, that he'd be erring on the side of caution after being out so long with a hamstring. But anyway, yeah, get well soon to Callum, because he's absolutely integral to this team.
Wouldn't be Newcastle United without a week's full of absolutely ridiculous news coming out. Let's start with Steve Bruce's appearance on Talk Sport, which has got a lot of fans chatting away on social media and the like. This is the main quote that has picked up the most traction from that interview. Steve said, here's the big thing. Newcastle in the last 14 to 15 years have been in the bottom half of the Premier League. We would all love to see Newcastle United being back to signing the Alan Shearers of the world for world record fees, but that just isn't going to happen. It is difficult managing the expectation that is obviously still there. Chris, I'm going to go to you first on this, because I'm not keen on that quote. I don't like it very much. Go, Chris.
Well, I was listening to the interview yesterday morning, and not only was it difficult enough, because I don't know if Steve Bruce was walking his dog or something outside, but the signal was terrible and it was very windy in the background. But yes, for a large part of it, I mean, he said some things which may have frustrated people, but on the whole, he could have said, right, he's sort of defending his own corner, he's bringing it across. But then when he brought up the expectation, when he used that word, which is always a dangerous word, particularly, I mean, a lot of Newcastle fans, and I entirely understand why, because you often get pundits on TV or ex-managers, particularly like the likes of Graeme Souness and Sam Allardyce, who talk about this expectation, this word that they seem to associate with Newcastle fans, as if they still expect to be the entertainers of 95, 96, as if they think they should be challenging for the Premier League every year, which is just such a misrepresentation of the reality of what Newcastle fans feel. I mean, there is no expectation among Newcastle fans at the minute, other than they would like to be able to believe that their football club could be better. They want to feel connected to their football club. And that hasn't been the case for a long while, primarily because of Mike Ashley's ownership, but also over the last year, they've seen Newcastle, when last summer it was talk of, Bruce was talking about top 10, progressing, and then for large parts of this season, albeit given all of the caveats of COVID and injuries and the like, Newcastle have basically been battling for Premier League survival, and well done to everyone for turning that around and getting there early, but I don't think it was an unrealistic expectation of Newcastle fans to believe that Newcastle should have been playing better, have more of an identity, been higher up the table this year, and not have having to rely on the situation they were in. Given that the head coach himself had said last summer that the goal was to try and push up the table, and I thought it was a strange own goal that he set himself, and he sometimes does this where he'll say things, and on the back of such a positive win on Friday, I just thought it was an unnecessary comment. I don't think he meant it. I don't think it was meant in an incendiary sort of way, but unfortunately, that clumsy sort of language has had exactly that effect.
Yeah, I listened to that, and I just thought, you know, does he speak to Newcastle fans? Does he? I mean, we are the least demanding fans in the world, I think. I think, you know, no domestic trophy since 1955, no major honour since 1969. God almighty, we don't expect much, you know? It's a little bit of hope and we're all over it. We showed that with Rafa Benitez. We finished 10th and 13th. We were happy as pigs and shit. What's the matter with us? You know, we were all over it. You give us something to grab onto, something to latch onto, and we will go with it. Newcastle United is the easiest sell in the world. I've said this a number of times on this podcast. Mike Ashley has got the easiest job in the world to sell Newcastle United to its fans because we want to believe. We want to believe that there's something there. We want to believe that the club is ambitious, that it's going forward, that it's progressing. And then you hear these lazy stereotypes about fans. Every single fucking week, without fail, we get it. Is it Rio Ferdinand? Is it, you know, Hairy Hands, Richard Keys? Is it somebody else saying that we expect too much? We demand, you know, oh, the fans make your life a misery up there. It's bullshit. I'm sick of it. And all Steve Bruce has done with that interview was fed into it. Now, he might not have meant to, but he should be switched on and savvy enough to know that saying those things is going to get everybody's backs up. I don't think there was any need for that interview. I don't know what he was hoping to achieve by it. If he had to go online on TalkSport and say something, just say, we're really pleased by Saif. It was a great result against Leicester. The lads have done really well. We're chuffed for the fans. We can't wait to see everybody back in next season. I don't understand why he had to go down the road he did.
It's a word I've written about countless times over the years. I hate it. It's one of those, you know, it is one of those words I kind of have a visceral response to. As you say, Taylor, you're spot on. There's, you know, the only expectation at Newcastle is that if things can go wrong, then they will go wrong. And it's been like that. It's been like that for a long time. At the same time, I think Bobby, in the book that I worked with him for, the way he expressed it was, he said that the kind of highs are higher at Newcastle and the lows are lower, and I tend to agree with that. I think it's an emotional club with big emotional pulls, and when things are going well, as you say, Taylor, when there's that buy-in, it's an absolutely sort of magnificent sight and feeling. And when things go badly, it has the same feeling. It feels like it's the end of the world. I mean, I do think that kind of part of the cliche is right. But the expectation thing is nonsense. And, you know, Chris and I have written about the sort of Steve Bruce's language problem. The point is that he speaks like an outsider. And that is the thing that's sort of difficult. You know, there's this, you know, sort of notion from outside. He's a Geordie. He just wants the best for the club. But he actually talks. He talks like an outsider sometimes in the use of that sort of language. Oh, blimey, they expect so much up there, don't they? It's like, well, no, they expect better. They expect better than this version of the club, or they hope for better than this version of the club. And I think that's okay. I don't think there's a, you know, I mean, the rest of what he said, we sort of agree with. But I mean, in terms of the last 14, 15 years being in the bottom half of the Premier League, I mean, the irony about that is that that's exactly the period of time that Mike Ashley's owned the club, and before then it wasn't always like that. so that's the sort of irony. But yeah, it's like, well, I think it's all right for people to want better football than's been played this season. By and large, it's okay to, you know, the team has been 17th and 16th and 17th for long periods this season. That's not, you know, that's not really acceptable. And he's at the epicenter of all this, and I know that's tough. I know it's not nice sometimes, and it's difficult. But it's like throwing it back onto the fans when really he's in a position to make things better. I mean, that's his job, and you know, too often this season, it's not happened.
It hasn't, and I think there's been a bit of a late flurry at the end of the season, and you know, there's been some good feeling and stuff like that, because we've won some games, we've picked up some points, but it's it it's papering over the cracks, isn't it, of what is essentially a really bad season of football. Barely surviving, to me, is nowhere near good enough, Chris. And I don't know how you feel about this, but that's not enough for me.
No, it's not enough. It shouldn't be enough for anyone. And the idea, and it's that idea of
it's enough for Mike Ashley, though, isn't it?
Well, it is. Yes, that is the problem. That for Mike Ashley, that is, and as Steve Bruce said in December, that is his remit. That is essentially what, and that's why in April they decided they still thought Steve Bruce could keep Newcastle United up, and if he was going to manage to do that, then to them that would be to the hierarchy that was sufficient. That was acceptable. I just think that it's the language that Bruce sort of uses when he talks about, you know, edging the club forward, and then when he says that Newcastle have been this bottom half team for so long, and I understand where he's come from, because he's right. I mean, he's right that that's where they become, but it's again sort of mirroring the vision of above, is that there isn't, well, there is no vision. There is no idea. That's where we've been. Why would you expect us to be any different? Is that, well, you were talking about top half last year, and as I say, I don't think that he meant it to be in a sort of inflammatory way as he did, but the problem is that sort of clumsy language, just all of the positivity that maybe built up over the last few weeks when the team was starting to play better, Friday night's brilliant result, it's just, I think the problem with Steve Bruce at the moment, and this is what I said during the international break, is I just think that there is a point now where it feels like it's reached the tipping point with supporters, and I think that there is always that moment where there may be small highs, but it's going to fall back down again, because he hasn't been able to connect with them, because he hasn't been able to offer them a vision of what Steve Bruce's Newcastle United would look like in a positive sense. It always seems to be looking back, it always seems to be harking back to the fact this is what the club has been like. But it's like, well, where we're going to be in a year's time? Then what is it going to be like in 2 years' time? And he's 2 years into his. Newcastle United tenure now, Newcastle should be mirroring what Steve Bruce wants them to be, not just once in every 15 games as they are at the minute when they play away at Leicester. It needs to be more regular than that, and you still can't see a definitive pattern there.
Right, we'll move on slightly. A new anti-competition lawsuit against the Premier League launched this week by Newcastle United. A statement from that, a little quote from that: in reaching the director decision, the defendant failed to apply the rules in a fair, objective and non-discriminatory fashion and or used its powers under the rules for the improper purpose of promoting its own commercial interests and or the interests of its business associates and or certain of the Premier League members in a manner that was detrimental to competition and consumers. It seems Mike Ashley is going to war with the Premier League, George. That's how it feels at the moment.
Well, it's a new front in that war, isn't it? I mean, you're right. It's just it's hilarious in some ways. I mean, again, you know, we don't get the people at the top of the club speaking about anything unless it's about the Premier League, when they use this sort of inflammatory language and. You know, we're batting for fans. You know, it's time fans had, you know, the club they deserved, all this, you know, this sense. And it's like, yeah, bother.
Mike actually really completely ignoring the fact that he's the only person who could have given us that in the last 15 years.
Yes, exactly. As if he's not had anything to do with the last 14, 15 years.
Wasn't me, lads.
No, and, you know, Chris's piece kind of goes into that, you know, brilliantly. If you're talking about sort of dark forces looming over the football club, it's been one man, which is the kind of huge irony. But yeah, he's not letting it go. I mean, I spoke to people about this last week, and that, you know, there was a sense of surprise that this was perhaps started at the same time as arbitration, as opposed to afterwards. But it shows he's not going to let it go, whether it's actually pushing the takeover through or getting compensation, loss of earnings, all that kind of stuff. You know, he's determined to stick with it. I mean, you know, that's admirable in some ways. At the same time, it just means that, and this does kind of join up to what Steve Bruce has said in that interview, you know, and all of that feeling around it, that we're sort of having to get our heads around this being the case, you know, this being the situation at the club for the foreseeable future. So Newcastle have stayed up, that's great, but at the moment we're just looking forward to more of the, you know, to kind of more of the same, and, you know, that's kind of difficult to take. you know, in terms of that quote about Newcastle being a powerhouse, I think the frustration is that there's been times, you know, in certainly in my living memory, when Newcastle have been that. We saw a glimpse in the Leicester game about the team that they could be, you know, going to a team that's in the top four at the minute, taking them on as equals and beating them. And that was, you know, that was kind of great and it was good fun, but it doesn't happen very often. The thing is, you know, the thing is with Ashley, yes, it would be great to be a powerhouse. It'd be great to be one of the richest, best, you know, biggest clubs in the division in terms of finances. But what I'd like is for Newcastle to be competitive and for Newcastle to make the most of what they've got. And they've not done that. I mean, they've done the bare minimum. They haven't improved facilities. They haven't improved the stadium. They haven't improved the training ground. Things that, you know, things that would actually take a little bit of investment, but that would pay off over years and years and years and years. And it would not have been it would not have been impossible for Mike Ashley to do that. Fine, we can't go out, you know, as Steve Bruce said, we're not going to go out and break world transfer records anymore. But that's not the point. That's not the point. You can invest cleverly. You can invest cleverly on players. You know, Leicester are a good example of this, by the way. You know, you can be smart in terms of investment. You can be smart in terms of training ground and all those sorts of things. You can be smart in keeping fans on board by letting them buy into what you're doing. And again, that's the frustration. They've not even done that. It shouldn't be an either or. You know, there's a way that Newcastle could be ambitious and competitive without spending the earth.
This is it. I mean, the club are in a position where really Ashley's obviously wanted out for a long time. And now it's a case of the fans are just sort of sitting here and waiting for some kind of takeover to come to fruition. But Ashley needs to remember, you know, in the meantime, he has to do the best that he can. He has to keep doing the right things. And then hopefully for the fans, the time will come when you know, we hit a new era. We move on from Mike Ashley and the club changes direction and we can actually get to where we want to be. Just to give a little bit of context, Chris, I'm going to come back to you in a second with this, but just to give a little context to this quote that's came out this week, because in case people haven't seen this, it was linked to a statement which was released with regards to the HMRC investigation, which has now been dropped, and Ashley released the statement, and in the statement he stated, it's very dramatic, this language, isn't it? It is now time for the dark forces that are preventing this football club from becoming the powerhouse that the fans deserve to step aside. Has he got scriptwriters working for him at the minute, Chris? Is that...
Well, this is what ridiculous, isn't so it? Infuriated me, and I'm sure it did a lot of other supporters, is this portrayal of himself as if he's the fans' champion, as if he is... It's become a weird sort of quasi-ally with some fans because he's trying to force
Nottingham,
him to take
over.
It's
the Robin Hood thing. That's where it is.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, but he's actually, and I nicked this one off George, but George said he's trying to be Robin Hood when actually he's been the Sheriff of Nottingham for the last
exactly,
14 years.
Yeah,
you can't be both. And to use the term more annoying to me than dark force and powerhouses to say the fans deserve an owner and have deserved an owner for the last 14 years who gave a toss about them, who tried
exactly.
to do something
yeah.
for them, who's
who
listened
to them.
Them.
Yeah, who listen and speak to them.
Speak to them, exactly, who deserves to be spoken to about more than just this. As I mentioned in the piece, Newcastle, again, the figures were released last week, the furlough figures for February, Newcastle again took between £100,000 and £250,000 for another month for furlough. My understanding is that still staff furloughed. Never has that been confirmed by the club. We've had the season ticket issues over the course of last week, which was almost hidden behind because it was on the same day as all of this came out. But on the season ticket situation, it's brilliant that supporters are getting back, and there was never going to be an ideal situation. There was always going to be people frustrated because they could only get 10,000 back at the stadium. But some fans who've taken money back out of the club because they needed to over the course of the last year for financial reasons have been penalised as a result of that and haven't been given the opportunity to go to Sheffield United next week. Yet a lot of the corporate seats, so many of whom have not paid anything over the course of last year, have got the opportunity to go next week. Now, things like that, it's like there's no real explanation of that there. There's no communication about that beyond just a statement on the club website. We haven't even heard Lee Charney saying how excited he is for fans to be back in the stadium or how much we look forward to welcoming supporters back. It is infuriating, and it is incendiary for Mike Ashley to try and do that, to try and present it. Fair enough, he may be trying to push through this takeover, and although I think that what's slightly different about this anti-competition tribunal as opposed to arbitration is. Whereas arbitration is on behalf of Newcastle United, this other case is on behalf of St. James's Holdings, which is Mike Ashley's company. And so actually, arbitration could push through and the takeover could happen, but the second one is also to try and get Mike Ashley, if the takeover doesn't happen, some compensation. So this is about Mike Ashley more than anything else, or at least that's my reading of the situation. And Matt Slater and I are going to write a piece on this at some stage, sort of looking at what the difference between the two of them are, why they can run concurrently. But it's just, it is infuriating that you have an owner who has the gall to come out and say that, communicates so little, and then puts out the statement like that and expects it, that everyone is suddenly going to bow at his feet and think that he's the great saviour of Newcastle United.
Anyway, that's the darkness finished with. The dark forces are now done and dusted. Let's move on, chaps. It's time for the archives and a bit of light from yesteryear. Let's look back to May 1993, Newcastle United 7, Leicester City 1, Newcastle lifting the First Division title. Yeah.
It's the party at the park they've all been waiting for. St. James's is jumping and the Toon Army is ready for the grand finale to a sensational season.
Good afternoon. Welcome to St. James's Park. An unbelievable atmosphere here with Sir John Hall there batting his magnificently successful managerial team of Terry McDermott and Kevin Keegan. Smiles all round. And these are the moments they'll treasure for the rest of their careers. Two trophies on show this afternoon, the original Football League First Division Championship trophy and of course the Barclays trophy as well. Well, it's 66 years since that First Division Championship trophy was at St. James's Park, and the management team and the chairman applaud as the players come out.
Kelly, good save, and Cole. Meat and drink to Andy Cole. Lee now for Cole, and now it's Robert Lee. 2-0, Robert Lee. Cole again gets it back, and Lee Clark looking for David Kelly. 3-0, David Kelly gets his goal. But here's Sellers, and Lee Clark, and Kelly. Kelly again. Superb finishing from David Kelly. Difficult bouncing ball there. Kelly got a lovely knockdown on it. And Cole, 5. It's all going their way. They can do absolutely nothing wrong. Clark there, Sellers and Robinson. And Kelly, it's 6. Unbelievable. David Kelly, the hat-trick. And now Lee Clark with a little bit of room. Anywhere near the amount of room before, but now it's Cole through the middle. Andy Cole, here we go again. Andy Cole gets his hat-trick now. That's his second for Newcastle, and it's lucky 7.
Oh, my God. To be honest, I'm sitting listening to that with a massive smile on my face and getting a little bit emotional. Is it dusty in here, Chris, or is it me? Oh, my God.
I keep bumping into Roger Thames, by the way, who doesn't live too far away from me, and we have a chat. I love Roger, and he listens to the podcast, so if he's listening to this, hello,
fantastic.
Roger. And yes, we must get you on. We're going to get you on, so we must do that. But yeah, just great hearing his voice, and yeah, especially with that game. Wow.
Yes, Chris, never has a game of football been more of a party and a celebration than that, has it?
Well, I can only assume that. I mean, I was at this point like 21 months
twinkle.
Old.
Well, yes, I was, were you born there. By this point? Yeah, you were.
I was born. I was born. But I have. It is one of those games that when you're brought up in this area, everyone talks about, and I have watched over and over again the highlights of the match. And yeah, I mean, 6-0 at half time was just absolutely extraordinary.
Amazing.
That they rushed into that lead. And I mean, it could and possibly should have been more as well. They were just absolutely dominant.
Absolutely. And I mean, hat-tricks for Andy Cole and David Kelly, who I must say as well, David Kelly was my first ever Newcastle United hero. I absolutely loved him. I worshipped the ground he walked on. He was everything that I wanted in a footballer. He was just... I love the man so much. He's another person I would love to get on the podcast at some point and talk to him. David Kelly with a first half hat-trick for Andy Cole as well, and Rob Lee popping up with a goal as well. Like you say, Chris, 6-0 at half-time. Absolutely, I've never seen anything like it before. And just an astonishing atmosphere. George, you were there that day, you were saying? 30,129 fans inside of St James's Park. I can only imagine the noise was absolutely incredible.
Yeah, it was my favourite season, I think, if I had to name one, it'd be like that one, 93-94. But that was the season I came back from college, and I just remember sort of the feeling in Newcastle the summer of 92 and you know, the buzz that there was about the team staying up under Keegan, and then sort of looking forward to what sort of happened next. And for the first half of that, I mean, I went to every home game, and the first half of that season, I would go with my mate, Andy, and we were queuing up for 90 minutes to get in, to make sure of getting in. And we would sometimes be first in the queue to do that. And then we were on the Gallagher end. So many memories of that. Turning around, feeling this sort of warmth on the back of my leg once, and turning around and seeing this like wizened old bloke pissing into a Max Pax coffee cup, which was absolutely fucking tiny. And he was pissing into this cup, and it was just spilling over the side. It's like, what? Why are you bothering with the cup? being moved up and down the, end when goals went in and stuff like that was brilliant. And then, I can't remember when it was, but halfway through or two thirds of the way through, suddenly having to find money to get a half season ticket to make sure that we could get in, and then moved around the stadium. And it was just brilliant. It was just absolutely brilliant. The whole place was alive. And yeah, you could. I mean, it was Kelly's last game, wasn't it? And it was Gavin Peacock's last game. That's I love both of those players. He played such an integral part for the team that season. And Andy Cole scoring a hat trick, a sign of that feeling of a team developing and kind of moving on and stuff like that. And of course, at the end of it, you know, sort of when the team did the bus tour and went to the Civic Centre and stuff like that, and Keegan saying,
"I was there that night as a 10-year-old."
Tell Fergie that we're coming after him, and you know, and then doing it, and it was just amazing. Brilliant. It was just an absolutely fantastic, fantastic end to just a perfect season. And the football, you know, it was different to when Les came in, and it was sort of, because they had these busy players, it was all like little one touch sort of triangles of passing. Everybody was really good on the ball anyway, but it was a lot of, you know, through balls, things like that. It was just great to watch. I loved it. Yeah,
there was some incredibly shrewd business in the transfer market from Keegan that year, wasn't there? Rob Lee came in, obviously Barry Venison, who we've spoken about before, Scott Sellers, Brian Kilcline, Paul Bracewell, and probably the best signing of all was Andy Cole coming in the second half of the season and scoring all those goals that he did and firing us to the title. Like I said, I was 10 years old at the time, and it was the year that I properly fell in love with Newcastle United. It was the year that I realised what it meant to feel like when you had your team, you know, when you found your team, because up to that point I didn't have my team, and then I found Newcastle United, and that was my team. And that the feeling on that day and all through that season as well. Like you, George, I queued up with my uncle and my cousin in the first five or six home games, and then we just couldn't get near it. We just couldn't get in. And at the time, you know, I couldn't afford season tickets and stuff like that. So it was very difficult to watch the games live. We went up that day to try and get in against Leicester, and we couldn't get in, and ended up coming home and watching it on the TV. And it was just amazing. For me, as a 10-year-old fan, seeing them come out in that new kit with the blue star on the front, the R6 kit, and the big black, the big white number on the back. Oh, man, the hairs on the back of the neck. The sky was the limit for Newcastle at the time, wasn't it? The achievements could have been anything. It was just a brilliant time.
And, you know, we've seen the last few weeks, the whole thing about the Super League and the Big Six and all that kind of stuff. I mean, this was a time when you had an insurgent team coming up, and yeah, there was investment behind them and things like that, but really it was momentum. I mean, that's what they had. They had momentum, And, you know, this is why, you know, it's one of the reasons why our pyramid is so important and so vital and so good that that we have that competition. And Newcastle came up and rocked the establishment. And, you know, just so good. Yeah, so good. I mean, I was talking at the start about Leeds and going there and sort of seeing that embodiment. You know, as an outsider, I'm talking as an outsider, but if I, you know, the qualities that I'd always associate with Leeds, I think Bielsa has got in this current version. It's a modern version of Leeds. You know, they're not dirty. It's not, this isn't, they're not a dirty team, dirty Leeds, but they're aggressive and they're in your face and all that. Well, that Newcastle was the version of Newcastle I'll always come back to, that somehow, you know, that represents us. It's ambitious, it's forward thinking, it's adventurous, it's attacking, it's, you know, it's the noise of St James's Park. It's that thing. And I'll, you know, it's difficult to compare anything else to it after, you know, once it stopped happening. But I, you know, that's what Newcastle absolutely will always mean to me.
And at the risk of sounding like a massive fangirl, David Kelly, if you are out there and you do hear this by any chance, let's go for a pint. You were my first Newcastle hero. You were my first Newcastle autograph. And I would very dearly love to give you a big fat hug. There we go. Newcastle United 7, Leicester City 1, 9th of May 1993. Newcastle taking the league title. Right, we're going to move on. And last this week is the quiz. And it is hosted by 13-year-old Christopher Waffles from Newcastle, who wrote in to ask me if he could host the quiz this week. He's a big fan of the podcast. He listens every week. He says he doesn't like that George bloke, though. He sounds a bit grumpy at times, and he should just get on with the quiz instead of being miserable. Chris, it's a bit harsh.
Yes, well, I spent all my time writing that note to you rather than spending time on the quiz, so that's why this is all a bit half-assed. I had thought about doing a Dark Forces quiz, and then I just couldn't figure out how I was going to do it. I had thought about trying to do an anagram and things like that, and it just wasn't going to work. So all the thought that I put into that is... Yeah. All the failed thought I put into that have not gone in this. But anyway, I want to take us into the centre of Newcastle, down by the quayside, to the Red House. We are sitting, yes, having a pie with some mash and some gravy. A wonderful selection of pies there, if you've never been, definitely recommend it. Some lovely ale. And yes, we've just finished, just about, rather than George fall asleep in the corner after his dinner, he's gonna take part in the quiz, whether he wants to or not.
Well, we'll see about that, Chris.
So,
take part's a bit strong, isn't it?
So, after all that I said earlier about getting carried away, well, Newcastle won against Leicester City on Friday, so let's get carried away and suggest that they're going to win again on Friday against Manchester City, and let's look back at the last time Newcastle United beat Manchester City, which was on the 29th of January 2019, arguably the most impressive win of the Rafa Benitez era, and in penalty shootout style, I'd like you to name the Newcastle United starting 11 that night, please. George, do you want to be heads or tails?
What year was this, Chris?
2019. January 2019.
Did you say Rafa Benitez?
I'll say heads.
Rafa Benitez, yeah.
29. Oh, right, yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, well, yes.
So your heads,
yeah.
George, did you?
Yeah.
Heads it is. Do you want to...
I was going to say that was the season that... Yeah, no, I can't give clues away, can I?
Well, I mean, you can if you want to, but it might be...
No, I don't want to give clues away. Yeah, we'll have to
George, do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Right. Go on, then.
What am I doing?
Name in the start. I want the starting 11.
Okay, Dubravka. I know he played.
Dubravka did play indeed. Correct. 1-0, George.
Jamal Lascelles must have played.
Jamal Lascelles did play 1-1.
Salomon Rondon
did play. He also scored. He did indeed. Scored in the 66th minute to equalise.
And Matt Ritchie scored the other goal, so it was a penalty.
Matt Ritchie did score the other goal, yes. Penalty, the winner. It was after Aguero scored in the very first minute. Newcastle were behind after 30 seconds or so.
That's right,
so 2-2.
Jose Perez.
Jose Perez is correct. 3-2 to George.
Hang on, my dinger's fucked.
What was that? Your dinger's
fucked. There we
go. Oh, I know a good doctor can sort that out for George. Let's have a think. That end of that season would have been when Sean Longstaff was playing a few games, wasn't he? Would Sean Longstaff be one of those players, Chris?
Sean Longstaff was indeed midfield, yes. 3-3.
And he was playing very impressively alongside, guess who? Isaac Hayden.
Oh. Isaac, lovely Isaac.
That was their best. I'm kind of assuming that they played together in this game. But yeah, I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did.
They did indeed, George, yes. 4-3 to George. Ooh, doing well so far.
Well, this isn't very long ago.
Yes, I know. Well, that's why I thought you might have a chance on this one.
I've got a pretty good memory of this, to be honest.
Well, you couldn't even remember the game before.
No. It was just because when you said 2019, I thought, was Rafa Benitez still here in 2019? And yes, yeah. He was. oh, God, I can't remember who's been said now.
So George is winning 4-3, so seven players are gone. There are still three defenders and a winger.
Right, okay. Fabian Scher.
Correct. Fabian Scher, please.
Is that where you were going next, George?
Yeah, well, I think...
Awful well, pressure.
City, wasn't it? So he did play three at the back. So I think Lejeune must have played, did he? Oh, God, he might not have, though.
Correct.
Sure he played. Oh, okay. Correct. He's doing it anyway. Right,
whoa,
okay,
that wasn't his answer there, by
the
way.
Oh, sorry.
Chris, come on. Get control of the situation here. You've lost the game.
I'm never in control.
Well, I was thinking Fernandez. There was Fernandez as well, but Lejeune, yeah.
I'm not having that. Right, okay. So we've got two left.
Yep.
What is it?
If it's fives each, I've got it. Then I've got a question. I've got a sudden death question. Yeah.
Yedlin, DeAndre Yedlin.
Correct. DeAndre Yedlin was a right wing back. Now this isn't for the quiz, but can you between you get see if we can get full marks? Do you know who the 11th player was?
What did you say it was a winger?
It's a winger, yes. Winger/forward, yeah, but winger.
It'll have to be
what? So hang on. So it was three at the back, wasn't it? And so you had was Richie playing on one side and Yedlin
Richie
on the
was
other?
Wing back and Yedlin on the other side, yeah.
So it was a sort of forward. Well, what I was going to say was the interesting thing about that night was that was the night that Almiron signed officially as well, and the club the club wanted Rafa to announce it immediately beforehand to kind of take the pressure off. He's talked about that kind of quite funnily to sort of take the pressure off them and all that kind of thing, because there was a bit of pressure. Well, there's always pressure around the hierarchy, but all that was going on at the same time, wasn't it? And then there was no expectation that we were going to... Sorry to use that word. That we were going to win, but then we obviously did. And the end of that season was really, really good. I can't think.
It's Cristianato, isn't it?
It is indeed. Cristianato, there's your 11th
Doesn't matter,
player.
Though, because it was 5-5, George.
It was 5-5, but I do have... So there is a tiebreak.
Kennedy was still there, wasn't he, at that point? But he was so...
Yes. Poor. So the bench was Freddie Woodman, Kieran Clark, Kennedy, Federico Fernandez, Jacob Murphy, Javier Manquillo, and number 37, Cal Roberts, I believe.
Cal Roberts, yeah. When you compare that to Man City's bench, I'd imagine it's a bit of a difference.
Well, yes, very much so. I mean, that was quite the... Yeah, Aguero scored after like 20 odd seconds. But that was the amazing thing about that night. They did not panic as well. They still stuck to the game plan Benitez had. They were very, very good on the counter-attack and took their opportunities.
Quite late, the goals as well, weren't they? From what I remember.
Yeah, it was second half.
Richie,
I think
goal was the last 10 minutes, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think Rondon 66, Richie 80, so... Because Longstaff won the penalty as well. He got fouled by, I think it was Fernandinho. He got him behind him, nicked the ball. But anyway, so tiebreak question.
Come on then, Chris. Come on.
So that was a momentous victory for Newcastle, not only because Manchester City were the defending Premier League champions, but also because Newcastle's record against Manchester City was abysmal.
Yeah.
How many league games had Manchester City gone unbeaten against Newcastle before that victory? So I want the closest two between the two of you. So how many league games had Manchester City gone and beaten against Newcastle before that victory?
Who's going to go first?
I don't know, 18?
I'm
afraid Taylor wins it. 22. They'd drawn 3 and lost 19 in the previous 22 games in the league.
Well, there you go.
Hey, George, come on now.
It was the first time they beat them since really September 2005 in the Premier League.
Wow. There we go. Well, what a face-off that was, George. I don't know how you're feeling, but I'm right on the edge of my seat here. Like, that was amazing.
Well, I'm feeling very angry, Taylor. That's how I'm feeling.
Well, you're doing the quiz next week, George, so you've got your chance to get me and Chris back.
I'm bidding this quiz off. I'm sick of it. I'm just going to do the questions every week. I'm sick of this. I want to change it. I'm changing it. Or I might change
the podcast.
You want
to be the quiz master every week, George, so you don't have to answer questions. I might just have me be waffles.
I'm going to move on to the Leeds podcast.
You'll be back with your tail between your legs within a week. You watch. Well, there we go. Thanks for that, Chris. That was a lovely quiz. Well done.
Thank you. Yeah, as I say, very half-assed, but well done to both.
Just 11 people who played in a team 2 years ago. I think that's minimal research from Chris there.
Well, there we go. Well, let's wrap it up, chaps. Thank you very much for your time. And thank you lot out there for listening as well. Make sure you hit the subscribe button so you don't miss any episodes, and visit theathletic.com/NewcastlePod for 40% off the full price of subscription. Until next time, take care, and thanks for listening to Pod on the Time. See you later. Listen to that music. If the next voice I hear isn't Roger Thames, I'm going to be very upset.
It's the party at the park they've all been waiting for. St. James's is jumping and the Toon Army is ready for the grand finale to a sensational season.
Good afternoon. Yes.
There he is.
The Athletic.